Live from the HananiaAutos.com studio.
Live.
This is the Gus Bradley Show.
Gus Bradley Show.
Jaguars head coach Gus Bradley and former Jaguar Jeff Loggeman are brought to you by Ticket Exchange and by Everbank. The Gus Bradley Show begins right now.
And welcome into the Gus Bradley Show. Jeff Loggeman alongside the head coach as we take a look back, take a look ahead, and everything in between. And good evening, Gus.
Good evening, Logs. How you doing?
I'm doing good. I've had a good week, and looking forward to a game in Detroit. A little cool weather up there in Michigan.
You know, it's starting to get colder. I see in the Midwest they had a snowstorm. You probably got your deer hunting in at the right time.
I was kind of hoping we would get a little bit of a cool front pushing down here that might bring us some rain. We're pretty dry here in the southeast. You've been seeing some of the forest fires that are going on in North Georgia, Tennessee.
No,
head coach got the blinders on.
No, you know, yeah, I know. That's bad, isn't it? I shouldn't know those things.
Do you know who won the president election?
Yeah, I do know that.
Okay,
I do know
just checking. Looking back at the Texans game, kind of the same thing, you know, the turnovers. Bite you in the butt and, you know, the pick six early. You had the fumble, lateral, whatever you want to call that. And you ended up minus two in a game. And the week before, we talked about minus four, the chance of winning in a minus four game, very, very small. But, you know, once again, you gave, you know, your team had an opportunity at the end.
We did. You know what? We had the pick six. And then, you know, give credit to the offense, though. You know, we came back, got the ball again, and drove down the field. Yeah, and
keeping
came back. And, you know, it was 7-7. So, you know, we recovered from that. But you're right. Turnovers are costly. And when you look at a game like we had with the turnovers and, you know, a long punt return, that game really good field position. There were some key plays in the game that really swayed it one way or the other. And but that's every game, right, Muggs? In the NFL, you can go back, and every coach on every team will say it's five or six plays that you can go back and look, and it determine the outcome of the game.
Yeah, it was that game, and when the first drive happened, and Blake had probably a bad decision to make the throw, and if it wasn't a bad decision, it was a late throw, and intercepted for the touchdown. But, you know, at that point in the game, you're like, okay, you got to answer it right now. And the offense was able to do that. 13 plays, 75 yards. That was the touchdown of Julius Thomas. And I was like, okay. You know, okay, now we're back to being even, you know, and you feel better about it.
It really was like, you know, they got the ball, opening drive, you know, opening kickoff, and went down and scored. And we came back, and with our opportunity, we came back and scored. So you're right. It happened at an early part in the game. It allowed us to adjust and recover from it. And, you know, like I said, to come back and score with that long drive, you know, I think it got it back to where, all right, we're back to even, and now let's go from here.
Blake Bortles' numbers in the game, 32-49, 265 yards, two touchdowns, the interception, 84.1 rating and a fumble, and he's getting a lot of attention. How is he doing?
He's doing good. You know what? I think ever since right before the Kansas City week, you know, that week of practice with Nathaniel. And I think that he did some really good things during that week of practice. And he went into the game, and I felt like he was more himself. And, you know, still had some work to do, but, he showed some glimpses of things that he can do like he's always done. You know, make some plays on the run, throw on the run, and make some big plays for us. And I thought that it came back again, and you could see some of those things again. Obviously, there's big plays that you see that it really jumps out at everybody. You know, a couple long throws, you know, the pick six like you talked about. Those plays can happen in a game, but when it's so close like the games we're in, they really jump out. And that's the life of a quarterback, life of a head coach, you know, anybody that's, you know, highly involved in it, like Blake is, it could come back to that.
What do you do to, you know, when we talk about the deep ball opportunities, what was it, two against Kansas City, maybe three. And there was a couple of them this past game against the Texans. As a coach, you know, and as a quarterback's coach, offensive coordinator, head coach, what can you do to actively help that? Is there something you can do?
Well, I think the big thing is don't overreact. You know, it's like, what happened? What do we got to look at? And sometimes it's a timing thing. Sometimes, you know, it's different to throw to Marquise Lee than it is to Allen Hurns. And you just need to work on those things in practice and get the timing down and on those deep balls. And you just keep working at it. It's kind of like where we're at right now. Just keep grinding through it and keep working. Stay positive. Have a lot of energy when you attack these things. And trust that it will come back into your favor. And that's the same approach that Blake has and the same approach we have with him.
Boy, there's a lot of opinions, though. I mean, holy cow, they're all over the map. People are like, yeah, take Blake out of there. But, you know, your press conference this week, you were asked that question, do you ever consider taking him out? And you gave the unequivocal support. Blake Bortles is our guy. He's going to be our quarterback, and that's it.
Well, you know, it's different when you're around him all the time and you're in our building and you're in with the players and with his teammates and see what he does on the practice field. And when you look at it from our view on tape and you see a lot of good things that are taking place with them. And there's going to be guys on our team that have some struggles or miss a play here or there or miss a tackle or, you know, things like that that take place. And you just stay strong for them. And you know what they're capable of doing and how much good they bring to your team. And, you know, just have a lot of trust in him.
Yeah, I think when I watch him, and correct me if I'm wrong, you know, some of the throws aren't where they need to be. The timing might be a little off. But for the most part, the decision of where to go with the football and seeing the field, it's there.
Yeah, and, you know, he's doing all the protections. He's making good decisions. You see the one over the middle to Marquise Lee, over the top of the linebacker, dropped it in.
Great throw,
great catch. The decision on the goal line for the touchdown with Allen Robinson. Allen Robinson did a great job shielding his body. Blake got out of the pocket, kept the ball alive, kept the play alive, threw it. You know, great decision.
The two-point conversion.
Yeah, you know, all those
great
things.
Great spot.
So you're seeing those plays like that happen. We just want more. We want more from our team. We want more from our players. And Blake understands that, but he's highly competitive, and we're seeing him improve as we go in practice, and we know that's going to carry over to next week. And so we have another opportunity in Detroit.
You had another chapter in the book of Nathaniel Hackett. And Blake threw the ball a lot. You obviously were two possessions down kind of towards the end of the game. I think TJ and Chris Ivory ended up with about 9 carries apiece, 18 carries combined. I thought the mix was good, though.
Yeah, it was. You know, that was my decision with, I think it was 8 minutes left to go in the fourth quarter. We're down by 2 scores to speed it up, you know, get the tempo going a little bit. So I think from that point on, we ran it one time. And it was important because we felt like we would have 3 possessions. We needed 2 to score. And so it was important to, you know, to gain those possessions with, you know, a little bit higher tempo. So I did. I thought Nate has done a great job. Look at the number of first downs that we have in the last 2 games. 48, 49 first downs. Our third down percentage was the highest in the league last week. So, yeah, you're seeing really good signs of it. It'd be nice for us. We need to get in the lead. You know, I think it would be good for both sides. Good for the offense to play with the lead. Good for our defense to be able to pin their ears back as well.
Allen Robinson had a fantastic game. 9 catches, 107 yards, a touchdown. Had the 2-point conversion. Was that his best game this year?
Well, I think, you know, it's classic example is Allen Robinson, the conversation we had about him a couple of weeks ago where, you know, we were having this conversation, Gus, is there anything wrong with him? He's dropping some balls. What do we need to do? Is he struggling? Is he pressing? Is he, you know, and you just stay the course and look at he's come through it, and he's done a great job, had one of his best games. So I think he's a classic example of that, that these players are professionals. They understand what it takes, and at times they show some signs where, you know, they had a tough catch or a tough drop like in Allen Robinson case or Blake Bortles. So, yeah, he's playing really well right now, both Marquise and him. And Allen Hurns had some opportunities as well. So receiving corps doing a nice job.
Ben Koyak snaps have gone up, playing very well. Seems to provide you guys a great, what I call a balanced tight end. Can block, he can catch. And I want to say that he's taking snaps away from Julius because Julius Thomas still getting snaps. But, boy, he's earned the right to play. And I think the thing that really stood out to me was training camp. You know, last year when you watched Ben Koyak play, physically looked good, made some plays. But this past training camp when he reported, it looked like he was bigger. It looks like he was a little faster. And his hands looked to be a little bit better. Well, what great progress that he has made.
He really has. You know what? And he got hurt for a while, so we didn't have him. But we saw those same capabilities in training camp. And so, we've always had that philosophy. If a guy is playing well and he earns it, you know, we're going to try to find a way, and he's active to try to get him on the field. And, you know, you're right. It's like Marquise Lee is going to take some reps away or some throws or catches away from a guy like Allen Robinson or Allen Hurns or Julius. And, you know, it's all right. It's about the team. And, you know, right, Julius still got a lot of reps. Ben has earned the opportunity, and it gives us a little bit different dimension with him in there.
Well, the offense, even though you're not getting wins, am I right to say that they're playing with more confidence in the last 2 weeks than what they played prior to it?
Well, I think the team is. You know, I think they're seeing defensively, you know, we're getting some good stops. The offense is seeing that. Offensively, the defense is feeling to move the ball and creating some opportunities, or, you know, we're putting some yards up there rushing and passing. So now it comes down to winning, and that's where the turnovers are a big, you know, kind of a sticking point for us.
Well,
right
you
now.
Talk about like four or five plays that make the difference in a game. You know, I mean, just look at a different team, the Detroit Lions. Yeah, I think it was the last four wins that they've had in the five games that they've played. I think those four wins, a combined 13-point victory margin.
Right.
It ain't much.
No, but that's the NFL. There's a couple teams that have done that. You know, I think the Giants are in the same situation, won a lot of close games. And that's what the NFL, that's what teams want. They want parity in the league. And you're going to have games like that. You have to do enough to get that, you know, that win in those types of games.
And just like the Texans, I mean, the Texans came in giving up more points than they had scored on the season, but yet they've got a winning record.
Right. Well, they did a good job. They won the turnover margin, you know, and, it sounds like we're talking about that quite a bit tonight. But that's a big factor, and, you know, they've done a good job in that area.
All right, we'll take some calls tonight, 904-355-6351 or 1-800-355-NFL1 if you'd like to dial in. And we will take a break here right here on the Gus Bradley Show, and we'll be back with more of the head coach right here on Jaguars Radio Network.
Welcome back to the HananiaAutos.com studio. The Gus Bradley Show continues right now.
Welcome back to the Gus Bradley Show. This segment is brought to you by Beard's Jewelry at the St. John's Town Center, where exceptional is affordable. Do we need to have a discussion about semantics tonight?
No. Let's stay on course here, Lance.
All right.
JP?
Let me put my blinders on. Let's flip over to the defensive side of the ball against the Houston Texans. Excellent job against the passing attack of the Houston Texans. 273 yards allowed, but 180 yards rushing. A lot of them on one big run that Lamar Miller had. But overall, good solid day for the defense. Not enough. But, you know, the one thing I think that was impressive about the Texans is that their passing game was just a non-factor, with the exception of one play.
Right. You know what? And Hopkins, a very good player for him, and we knew they'd like to try to get him the ball. The tight ends have been making plays for him out in the field, and they had a couple in the red zone for him. But overall, you're right. I think very good against the pass. I mean, we've had a number of situations this year where they've started on the other side of the 50. You know, it might be one of the, you know, as far as a defensive stat, you know, where drives start in that position. So it puts a lot of strain on the defense, and I think the defense has stood up. But you're right, not enough. We got to get more turnovers. When you get sacks or at least hurries, you get a chance to get the ball more. And we'd like to give our offense those short fields to work with, because our offense right now is having to drive 75, 80 yards for every score they get.
We're looking at the long run by Lamar Miller. I had a flashback. I think I told you this earlier in the week. You know, Yannick Ngakoue is the Leo, and he's coming down. He's the backside guy. He's unblocked. Got a great opportunity to make a play. And he kind of just falls down the length of Lamar Miller, and Lamar Miller keeps going. And I'm sure that it was a regretful play on his part, because I remember I had a play like that against Eddie George. I mean, unblocked, blind side of Eddie George, an opportunity to make a great play, maybe cause a fumble, and I didn't do either. But the good thing was is that later in the game, it wasn't the exact same play, but it was a similar type of scheme for him where he's unblocked coming off of the edge, and he's a young player. So to see him the second time to have that same type of opportunity and to come in with a vengeance to make the play was good to see.
It is. You know what? I think where it stands out is that when you have a player that's unblocked, screaming down the edge and, you know, has a shot at a free hit like that and doesn't make the play, it really stands out. But if you watch the play, he hesitated a little bit because of all the bootlegs that they run. He hesitated a little bit and allowed the play to have a little bit of a seam. And that's the part where you're talking about. The next time they tried to do that, he came down flat and made the play.
There wasn't even a glimpse of air
in
that seam the next time around. So, I mean, good to see. Third and 16. Watch the tape. You know, you guys are nickel. You got an offset back. And when you're a playing defense, you got an offset back. Is it running through their mind, okay, these are the possibilities that we might see?
Well, it's third and 16, and you're in backed-up situation. And so you try to figure out a team's tendencies. What do? Are they playing the field position game? And in that case, it's screen, runs. Let's take what we can get, punt the ball, and play the field position game. So if you look at it, it was an eight-man front. We didn't have two safeties back. We dropped a safety down playing the screen or the run, and they ran the ball. And, they just did a good job. We had some guys that happened to get out of their gaps of responsibility, and we had some overlapping. We talk about never chase the same color jersey. We had a few of that, and it created a seam. And, so you're right, such a big play in the game. I mean, a critical stop right there. Everything's going in our favor. Got them into a third and long situation, and it's frustrating. It's frustrating for our whole defense and for our team when you see a play like that happen, especially the players involved when they saw it on tape.
Dante Fowler had the one penalty in the game, and I think it's debatable whether it should have been called a penalty, but Dante's got to have the awareness. Just don't even touch him in that situation. And if you want to say there was improvement, he didn't blow him up, but you just can't put your hands on him in that situation.
No, you know what? He's playing with good effort when you watch him. I mean, if you watch that play,
his pursuit is unbelievable.
Unbelievable. And his decision-making. You know, he was clearly out of bounds, and you have to make good decisions. We were fortunate to come out of there with no points. But, again, it's that conscious to make the best decisions what's best for the team. And love the aggressiveness, but the decision-making part is, you know, where we challenge him.
I guess he said that he's been playing with an injury. Is he okay?
Yeah, he's okay. You know, a lot of our guys on the team right now, when you're in this week, you're going to have nicks and bruises. You know, a couple of guys I talked to today have sore ankles. And, you know, it's things that you just fight through. And at this point in time, you want to make sure they get as healthy as they can on Sunday.
There's a lot of attention on Blake Bortles. You know, a lot of questions you're getting this week is about the young pass rushers. You know, can they provide, you know, because the desire to get the ball taken away, you want more pass rush, you want to affect the quarterback. Are they doing a good job? I mean, grade Ngakoue and Dante Fowler for where they're at right now.
Well, I think you look at what they provide, you know, and some of the things that we're seeing is, you know, you look at the quick game that's taking place and some of the styles of passes that you're getting. You know, you look back at the Houston game. We've got, you know, they got 99 yards passing on us. And you're going, well, why aren't they getting more sacks? Well, some of it is because we're playing tight coverage and some of the games that we're doing up front. So I think you look at the big picture, but we always want more with those guys too. I think there's some things that they're going to improve on. They're young players. They're going against tackles for the first time. They're learning that part of the game. But their effort is outstanding. We challenged them this week to provide even more. I think it's also due to up front, too, the inside rushers. It's important that they get the push to, you know, condense that pocket as well for the outside guys. So everybody's involved in it, and we take a look at it that way.
It was a great matchup watching Jalen Ramsey versus DeAndre Hopkins. Jalen Ramsey held DeAndre Hopkins. It was 13 targets. He had 5 catches, 48 yards. And just the way that it started, and I showed this earlier in the week on television, the very first snap, they line up across from each other, and DeAndre Hopkins goes at him. And then the third play where they were lined up in that bump and run again, and both of them were run plays. The first play on defense, the third play on defense, also a run play. And the third play, Jalen was ready for it. And so DeAndre comes off again, you know, trying to establish a little perimeter there, you know, and Ramsey gave it right back to him, and that battle continued on throughout the game, and DeAndre had one nice play. I mean, the third and five, it was a great move in the line of scrimmage.
He did. You know, he had a move like that earlier in the game. But, I mean, it's the game within the game. And you look at Jalen, how he competed. You know, we've been putting him up against some very talented guys. And he's playing, like I said, right and left with these guys. And he's taking on the challenge, and he's doing a good job. And you know, that whole secondary, I think, is playing pretty tight coverage across the board.
Boy, there's not many rookies that have come out in the draft, and a team has felt confident enough to be able to flop him to either side to cover a best guy. That, to me, speaks volumes about Jalen Ramsey.
Well, it speaks volumes about not only is he talented, but his mentality. You know, and if he gives up a play, he quickly recovers, he gets lined up again, and he plays ball again. So he's got a unique personality, unique mentality when it comes to those situations. And there's some games where we didn't travel him, you know, and we played a little bit different coverages based on what we were seeing. So he's been able to adjust throughout the year.
That's an interesting term, traveling him. Does that mean flipping sides, traveling him?
Okay. You travel from one side to the other based on matchup.
A new term that I didn't know. Right here on the Gus Bradley Show. All right, let's take a break. More with head coach right after this, right here on Jaguars Radio.
Welcome back to the HananiahAutos.com studio. The Gus Bradley Show continues right now.
Join Coach Gus Bradley at the 7th Annual McKenzie's Run, a 5K run and walk, plus a 1-mile fun run on November 19th at Everbank Field. See Jackson DeVille and the Roar, plus a fun after party with live music and games. Participants finish inside the stadium and appear on the world's largest video board. The run benefits the McKenzie Noel Wilson Foundation and their mission to help young people recognize their full potential. Visit McKenziesRun.org to register. I'm a 1-mile fun run walk kind of guy.
You know what? You should be there, Logs. This is a great event. I've had the opportunity to be involved with it, with the Wilson family. And it's just such a cool event because it's in the stadium now. You know, they finished coming through and it's on the Jumbotrons and just a great family and a great charity event.
When's the last time you ran a mile?
This summer.
Really?
Yeah.
You can run?
Yeah. Logs, jeez. What, are you calling me out on this?
No.
I mean, you might as well call me out. You call me out on everything else, Joe?
I can't run.
Right now about me running.
I can't run anymore. I mean, yeah. I kind of jog and then walk, jog and walk. But, I mean,
what
I just
you
can't
race
go and run.
JP? No.
JP can't run anymore
that
either.
That was Tony raced you, didn't it, JP?
Yeah, and that's Baselli ended up beating JP up pretty bad in that last run that they had. How long do you run, though, when you would run?
Well, you know what? This summer when I was, you know, went over and, you know, did the elliptical and also ran in our development. So it was good. You know, nice little run. It's good for you, Logs. You should try it.
Nope.
Okay.
The knees don't allow it. Traveling to Detroit, the Motor City, this week against the Detroit Lions. Coming off of a bye. Football team is 5-4. They're leading their division with the Vikings. Vikings are also 5-4. And won four of their last five, kind of on a little bit of a hot streak, you might say.
They are. You know, I just think they're playing very well. Their quarterback is really the key to their offense, and he's making good decisions for them. I think he's throwing 5 interceptions, 16 touchdowns, you know, something in that vicinity. But you can just tell the way he's playing right now. And when he can get on a roll, I mean, he is something to watch now, and he makes really good plays for them, and he's got some threats on the perimeter to get the ball to.
Yeah, here's his numbers. 18 touchdowns, 5 interceptions, a 101.6 rating. That's number 5 in the National Football League. Maybe the most impressive thing is his completion percentage, 67.3, and that's really without, you know, running back that's been a carry-the-load type of workhorse.
Right.
He's had to do it with a bunch of different running backs.
He does. You know what? And that will take pressure off him. But I just think the way their offense is set up, it takes some pressure off them. They have some short, intermediate passing game, a good screen game that they're involved with. And then they take some shots. And they made some big plays off of that. So, I mean, if you watch him throw, the completion percentage that he has, but the zip that he puts on the ball, he has no fear.
He's got
now.
A good arm now.
Yeah, he does.
And when you talk about and I use this term quarterback-centric offense. When you look at that run-pass ratio, Matt Stafford has 318 passing attempts, and there are 178 rushes by the running backs, or should I say non-quarterbacks, you know, because there's reverses and everything else. That's a pretty big difference there, run-pass ratio.
Right. And, you know, I think with Detroit, they've always had that, you know, where they've leaned a little bit more towards the pass. With a quarterback like that, that can determine the outcome of a game and to put it in his hands, you can see why. You know, but their running game now, you know, especially, you know, earlier this year, you know, you can just see they had some really good threats. But now with, you know, pared down, Riddick, he's a good back coming out of the backfield and does a good job catching the ball as well as the run game. So they mix it up. But it really is centered around their quarterback.
Yeah, they've been mixing different guys in there. Theo Riddick, seventh-round draft pick that they've gotten. Dwayne Washington from Washington. Zach Zenner, South Dakota State. What?
That's right. Your team, the Jackrabbits.
Jackrabbit, that's right. And Justin Forsett, who was released by the Baltimore Ravens, is now on their roster. But when they do pass, Golden Tate, you know him. When you were in Seattle, he was with the Seattle Seahawks as well, wasn't he?
Yeah.
And the game winner against the Minnesota Vikings, he makes a catch on the boundary, tap dances back into play, making sure that it doesn't go out of bounds, and he scores. And come to find out, looking at some stats this week, he actually leads the NFL in yards after catch for all wide receivers.
Yeah, that's his ability. You know, you look at him, and he was a really good punt returner for us in Seattle when I was there. And that's what they do. They try to get him the ball and let him be, you know, like it's a punt return. So he'll catch the ball on screens, short, intermediate calls, and he can turn small gains into big gains. But this ability to make game-winning plays, game-winning catches, if you go back to when Seattle played the Green Bay game on Monday night, the last second play in the end zone, that was Golden Tate. The touchdown that he had for Detroit against Minnesota, the game-winning touchdown, that was Golden Tate. So he has that type of ability to make really big plays for a team.
Well, and with them not having Megatron anymore, I don't want to say he stepped up and taken all of the load because he actually hit a rough spot earlier in the year. Who he got his play time really lower dramatically at some point earlier this year. But they also have some other guys. Marvin Jones Jr., who they acquired in free agency from the Cincinnati Bengals. He's averaging almost 18 yards a catch. And the veteran, Anquan Boldin. The guy doesn't have great speed. But all he does is have like 1,000 career catches and 13,481 yards.
Yeah, I mean both those two. One obviously is the deep ball threat and can take the top off a defense. And then, like you just mentioned, Boldin uses his body, very, very strong receiver, good hands, and can post up and make critical plays at critical times.
All right, well, let's take a break right here on the Gus Bradley Show. We come back. We'll take a few of your calls. If you'd like to get in, 904-355-6351 or 1-800-355-NFL1 outside the call-in area. And we'll be back right here with the Gus Bradley Show on the Jaguars Radio Network.
Welcome back to the HananiaAutos.com studio. The Gus Bradley Show continues right now.
Welcome back to the Gus Bradley Show. Jeff Loggeman alongside the head coach. And as promised, let's go to the phone lines. Let's bring up Eric this evening. He's got a question for Gus Bradley. Good evening, Eric.
Hey, good evening, Jeff. Good evening, Coach.
How you doing, Eric?
I'm doing well. Coach, the same thing happened again. I called in last week, 3rd and 16. This time, though, from at least from my seat in the stadium, it was an 8-man front, and it just looked like the linebackers couldn't get off the blocks well enough. So I was pleased to see that. My only question to you is this, Coach. On 4th and 1 or 4th and 2 is short, I don't understand why we don't run Tyson as the fullback and Ivory just up the middle, just slam that sucker home. If you do it enough, I feel like that opens up, you know, Blake to do some naked bootlegs or anything like that. So I'll take my question off the air.
You know, on short yardage, you're right. I mean, we do it in goal line situations. We put Tyson in there, you know, to take it in 4th and 1 out in the field. No, those situations comes up. And, you know, Tyson does a good job now as a lead blocker. How much we utilize him in situations, you know, we always take a look at. But, you know, there's some areas that you have a lead fullback like that. It's a good thing on 4th and 1 and the boots. I can't argue that fact. We just, you know, choose to go another direction in those situations.
You know, it'd be a great thing would be is that if you had a whole bunch of them in a game and you can use all of them,
Well, yeah.
I mean, your options.
You got Ben Koyak, and you know, if you look at the beginning of the season, we went for it on fourth down quite a bit, and we were pretty successful on it. Now we've hit a couple strings. You know, we had a fourth and three. We didn't make it. And, you know, we got to take advantage of those. And if we're going to be aggressive and show that aggressiveness, you know, we got to take advantage of those times and have it end up leading to some points.
All right. Thank you for the call, Eric. The Detroit Lions defense, is it Terrell Austin, the defensive coordinator? Yep. Did I say his first name right?
Yep.
Got a reputation for liking to bring some pressure. And is that true? Because from watching the last two games that they played, they like to bring the nickel blitz. They like to bring linebackers. They like to bring extra guys.
They do. And, you know, they play with a wide nine. So their defensive end is outside the tight end. And, you know, they try to get the pass rush going with that aspect as well. And when you do that, at times, if you can hit it right, the run game can be, you know, you can have some success in the run game. But the wide nine, along with the dogs, the blitzes, the pressures, zone pressures, you know, they're creative in some of the things that they do. And it's important to keep them off schedule as well, or for us to stay on schedule.
I've always wondered, from a scheme standpoint, when you talk about wide nine that the Detroit Lions run, and they're not the only team that runs the wide nine. I think Jim Schwartz runs a wide nine in Philadelphia, right? What is the drawback, scheme-wise, to running wide nines?
Well, there's some things with the run game, you know, that make it difficult. I think there's some advantages to this and disadvantages of it. The wide nine, you really got to get that in. It's not like he just screams upfield every play because he's outside. I mean, he really attacks the tight end. He has to set the edge of the defense. And when you have a wide nine, there can create some spacing issues. And depending on how good of ends you have and how they're playing it, at times you can give up a lot of yards rushing. But when they learn how to play it and they're very aggressive with it and the team kind of understands some of the weaknesses, you get good pressure on the quarterback and you can, you know, be pretty solid against the run.
We didn't run much wide nine when Pete Carroll was the defensive coordinator when I was in New York with him. But I always wanted to play a wide nine.
Well, it sounds appealing, right? It sounds like, well, you're outside.
Get on space and
you can rush.
And go.
Yeah, but it's not like that. You know, you're still, if the tight end, you know, blocks down or if he blocks out, you really got to squeeze that gap. So it's not like you're just screaming upfield. There's some certain things that you have. If you are screaming upfield, opens up more spacing, and it's even a bigger issue with the run game. So, you know, that's where you give credit to Philadelphia. They're playing with the wide nine, and they're doing pretty good against the run. Now, a couple years ago, when they had that wide nine, they really struggled versus the run game. So it depends on your personnel and how you're playing it. But that's Detroit's philosophy.
Well, and they've got one guy in particular that probably is as talented of a wide nine type of player as there is, Zeke Ulanza. First 3 years in the National Football League. I believe he was a fifth overall pick back in 2013 for the Detroit Lions. First 3 years, 30 sacks. Last year had 14.5, made the Pro Bowl. This year doesn't have a sack because he's had a high ankle sprain that's kind of slowed him down. It looks like he's starting to kind of get back in a little bit of rhythm, but he's a perfect wide nine type of guy.
He is, you know, and a lot of times you got to look at who's inside too, because, you know, Nod is a good guy to have inside too. He takes up a lot of space and is a good player for him. So, you know, it's just everybody has a little bit different philosophy, whether it's 3-4, 4-3, wide nine, and it's based a little bit on your personnel and how you feel. Now, I think Detroit's defense was doing okay, but lately they're doing better, and, you know, statistics-wise, but they're playing with a lot of energy, that's for sure.
All right, so if you see a defensive end that's wearing number 61, what's the first thought that comes to your mind?
Yeah, you'd scratch your head, wouldn't you, until you watch this guy on tape, you know, and see what he's doing.
But doesn't that kind of give you a little bit of history on the guy? I mean, right away?
Help me out, Logs.
Well, I mean, most guys that come in the National Football League and they're going to play defensive end.
Oh, I thought you were talking about there was a great player that played, wore 61 that
well,
played.
No, I mean, that's
– right.
But, I mean, when – the defensive ends that come in or the high draft picks, the highly touted guys, when they come into the league, they're going to get, you know, a 90s number. They're going to get maybe a 50s number. But the Detroit Lions have a guy, Kerry Hyder, who has 7 sacks, and he wears number 61.
Right. Well, you remember Sheldon Day when he first came for us? I think he had a different number.
Okay,
and then,
but
then he switched
defensive
it.
Tackle though, right.
right? And he switched his
right.
number. You know,
but 61 as a defensive end, and he's wearing 61. My first thought was when I started watching this guy, and I didn't even know the stats yet. Didn't even look at the stats page yet, and didn't even read any bios. And my thought was this guy was probably undrafted, bubble player, and he's starting to earn his stripes and play well. And sure enough, I go and I read Kerry Hyder's bio. He was undrafted out of Texas A&M
yep.
and was on the Jets practice squad. He was on the Detroit Lions practice squad. Now he's active for the Detroit Lions, and he leads them in sacks with 7.
Well, that's what I mean. You get some guys that maybe a scheme fits them differently than another scheme. You know, in New York, you said they had a 3-4 scheme. You know, this is a wide 9, so it just fits him and his skill set a little bit better.
Interesting, though. 61. It kind of gives you the background of the road that he might have traveled into the National Football League. All right, let's take a break here on the Gus Bradley Show. We'll come back, talk some more about the Detroit Lions defense. Also, maybe get an update from the head coach on Telvin Smith and how he's doing. And we'll do that right here on the Gus Bradley Show on Jaguars Radio.
Welcome back to the HananiahAutos.com studio. The Gus Bradley Show continues right now.
And welcome back to the Gus Bradley Show, and I got to do a correction right away. Jeff Logman here with the head coach, Gus Bradley. And Gus, you pointed out to me that to get my schools right, Kerry Hyder is not from Texas A&M. Texas Tech. What is that, the Red Raiders? I got it right.
That's it.
I'm learning. Got Jackrabbits, Red Raiders, Bison, Cavaliers. I got it all figured out.
I mean, we got them all tonight, huh?
Got it all figured out. The Lions have a couple guys that may be returning to their lineup this week. Cornerback Darius Slay has missed the last couple games with a hamstring. And then also DeAndre Levy, linebacker, has missed the better part of 2 months with, I think, quad knee injuries. Very talented linebacker. And if they have those two guys, they're better.
They are. They are better with those two. Obviously, Levy's a guy that really runs their defense. I think he's an emotional player for them. I think they really rely on him, and he elevates, you know, a lot of the guys around him, especially in that front 7. Slay, I mean, we looked at him when he came out. Very competitive corner. I think he's really developed into being one of a very good corner, especially in that division for them, as you know, compared. So, you know, they just two very talented players. I'm sure they hope they have back.
Yeah, and the Lions for a number of years, Rasheem Mathis was up there. They kind of were struggling to find corner help, and Darius Slay has seemed to kind of help them out quite a bit.
He has, you know, and he's just I think over the course of time has become very competitive for him. So, very talented corner.
Do you know Jim Caldwell at all, head coach of the Detroit Lions?
Just, you know, meet him a couple times.
No conversations. Well, he's a pretty quiet guy.
I think, you know, a lot of respect for him. I know Dave Caldwell knows him pretty well and speaks very highly of him with his time with him and Chris Polian. So, you know, at meetings you get a chance to visit with him. But, you know, he's pretty reserved. But, you know, I think he's really well respected in the league.
The health of your football team, the Lions obviously had the bye week to get healthy. And it really struck me this week when the injury report came out. I haven't seen the injury report today, but the one that came out yesterday after Wednesday practice for your football team, you only had 3 guys on the injury report. And correct me if I'm wrong, but they all practiced. They were just all limited, which for week 11 in the National Football League, that's pretty incredible.
Well, I give a lot of credit to our coaches and then, you know, most importantly, our strength staff and our training staff, Milo, Scott Trulock, and his crew. They've done a great job with our guys. You're right, to be at this point and see 3 guys on the injury report. And, you know, ultimately you want to be able to play fast on Sunday and have as many guys as you can healthy and ready to go. And, you know, I think this week, the way we kind of designed practice and the way we designed practice back in training camp has put us in position to where we're pretty healthy now.
All right, well, let's take a break. We come back. We'll talk to Kelvin Smith, Kelvin Beecham, right here with head coach Gus Bradley on the Jaguars Radio Network.
Welcome back to the HananiahAutos.com studio. The Gus Bradley Show continues right now.
And it continues with me, Jeff Logman, and the head coach, Gus Bradley. And Gus, the injury report that came out had 3 players on it that had injuries on it. The other one that reported Telvin Smith did not practice yesterday, and then the news came out that his brother was shot and killed. how's he doing? I mean, I can't imagine dealing with something like that.
Well, it's always tough for me to talk about it just because, you know, a lot of it is personal, you know, and Telvin and I have had extended conversations, and I can tell you he's doing okay. I mean, like you would imagine, Telvin's got great spirit, but he's gone through a lot of emotions the past couple of days. And not only that, he's a leader of that family, and they respond to him. So he's not only providing strength for himself, but for his whole family, and at a tough time. So, but he's communicating and talking through it, and you know, his spirit is being challenged right now. But you know, Telvin, he's a great man.
And boy, what a crazy week! Loses his brother. And then has a son that was born, I believe, this week.
Right.
Yeah, you know, boy, with the emotions all over the place, something like that.
It is. And, you know, I'm sure it's difficult. How do you, you know, you're excited, but, you know, it's just he's got a lot of things on his heart right now. But, you know, hopefully we see him back here soon. I know his teammates would be excited to see him. And sometimes just to get back to seeing your teammates and loved ones here, too, helps. So yeah. We'll see. We just keep in contact with him, and we'll see when he comes back.
Yeah, I know sometimes with loss of family or loved ones or whatever, sometimes it's nice just to get your mind off of it. Sometimes the sports can do that.
It can, you know, and I think the birth of his son, you know, helps. But then there's also the reality of the funeral's coming up. And so just a tough week. I don't know if any of us can imagine. I know I haven't been through anything like that in 1 week. So, credit him and credit his spirit.
All right. Well, let's take a break. We come back. I want to spend some time talking about Kelvin Beachum and how he has recovered from a knee injury and been a really good football player for your football team. We'll do that right here on the Gus Bradley Show right after this on Jaguars Radio.
Welcome back to the HananiahAutos.com studio. The Gus Bradley Show continues right now.
And welcome back to the Gus Bradley Show. Here with head coach Jeff Lagerman and the head coach Gus Bradley. Kelvin Beachum, has he played every snap at left tackle this year for you?
Well, he missed the one game.
He had one game where he had he got hurt, right?
Yeah, but he does. You know, I think this was an injury that came back that we knew that he would be ready. We thought he'd be ready for the first game of the year, but then we'd have to manage it during the season and maybe a day off here and there. But now the last couple of weeks, he's practiced on both Wednesday and Thursday. And, you know, so he's battling through it. He understands there's going to be some swollenness, swollen parts. There's going to be some stiffness. But he's battled through it, and he's done a good job for us.
Yeah, I think that's been impressive. I mean, I remember coming back from an ACL, and it's not easy.
No.
It's not easy because, you know, a lot of people say, well, you know, he's got 8 months, 9 months, 10 months, 11, 12, 12 months, whatever the time frame is. People just assume when you come back and you hit that time frame, you're okay.
Well, and there's other things that are involved with it. It's not just the ACL or the MCL that you hurt. It's also, you know, might get some tendonitis. You know, there's other things that go along with it that you're dealing with and battling through as a player.
I remember coming back because, you know, and a lot of times with an ACL, they do the patellar tendon graft. So they take the middle third of your patellar tendon out, use that for your new ACL. And so you get that patellar tendonitis. And, I mean, I remember I had it. And you just, you know, you're massaging, you're icing, you're ice massaging. I mean, doing anything possible to try to take some of that inflammation off of your patellar tendon. And sometimes it just doesn't work.
Right. And that's what I was talking about. It might not be the initial injury. It might be something that's involved around it. And so, you know, like I said, I give a lot of credit to Scott Chulock and our staff in there and Milo and his staff because our players, if they have some of these nicks, they're still able to practice. And it's really a credit to our players to be able to battle through it. They understand the importance of practice and what we need to get accomplished.
So did you hear the news?
Oh, yeah, about Tony Boselli?
Tony Boselli.
I did.
He made the list of finalists for the 2017 NFL's Hall of Fame.
You know what? I was not in the league, you know, coaching when he was playing. But now that I've gotten to know him, and you go around the league and you talk to people that have gone against him, and just how good of a player he is and how good of a player he was, very talented. If he just had another couple of years, it'd be a no-brainer.
It'd be a no-brainer.
Right.
Yeah, I just remember going against him in practice, and I never lost more confidence in practice than anywhere I've ever played.
And he probably told you about it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he was just unbelievable. He was an unbelievable player. And Gil Brandt, who is a longtime respected personnel guy in the National Football League, also does some writing now for, I believe it's NFL.com, came out with a list where he actually ranks the semifinalists for the 2017 Hall of Fame. And his list starts with number one, LaDainian Tomlinson. Great player. Number two is Terrell Owens. Three is Kurt Warner. Four is John Lynch. Five is Torrey Holt. And number six, Tony Boselli.
You pull for him, you know, because he did have such an impact. And, you know, I don't know, a part of it is the charity part, but he does so much good in our community, too, as well. So, you know, I think it'd be cool if he got, received that honor.
All right, Bison update. Bison update.
Okay, who they have, Logs?
Well, let's go back to last week. They beat Indiana State 41-17. Wasn't even a football game. That leaves them at 9-1, and this week they have the South Dakota Coyotes.
Coyotes.
I'll make sure I pronounce that right. That game is 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on ESPN3. Last game of the season, and then playoffs, right? How long of a break do they get last game to play?
I'm not sure how long it is. Is it, if it's a week or 2 weeks, but I know they added more team to that playoff system, so... Hopefully they get some home games at the Bison Dome, at the Fargo Dome.
Well, and then, not that anybody cares, but my Virginia Cavaliers lost to the Miami Hurricanes, 34-14. They fall to 2-8. They got Georgia Tech the next week. Virginia Tech, big game right there, Gus. Thank you, Gus.
Okay, thank you.
Join everybody next week, same time, same place. Well, actually, next week is Thanksgiving. We'll see everybody in 2 weeks, right here on the Gus Bradley Show.